I suggest you do what he says, the nurse tells me. His tooth was abscessing. They pumped him full.
Greg, I... Come on, Elsie. I'll pay the usual rate.
No, I...
Shit. I chance a look at Jack, expecting to see, I don't know,
a sneer of disgust, the usual smirk, a SWAT team barging from behind him to handcuff me for solicitation. But he's waiting patiently, hands in the pockets of his jeans, the dark blue of his shirt pulling out the color in his eye. He's not wearing a coat because he's physically unable to feel cold. Born without thermoreceptors. A tragedy. Sure, I'll come for a bit. Let's go, Greg. I turn to the nurse, whose interest perked up at usual rate. Is there anything we should know? Here are his meds, starting tomorrow morning. Just put him to bed to sleep the drugs off. And don't let him make any major life decisions for the next 4 to 6 hours. No puppy adoption, no MLMs. Also, I Googled it. Quinoa's a seed.
Greg gasps. We should get a puppy.
Jack presses his lips together, but the dimple is right there.
My car's this way. I'll drive you to the Humane Society.
Buckling Greg up in the back seat of Jack's hybrid SUV takes so long, I contemplate never having kids. As the other not under the influence adult, I'm probably expected to ride in the passenger seat next to Jack, but nope. I'll sit in the back in case Greg needs anything. Jack's look clearly says,
I know you're avoiding me.
Because of course he does. He knows everything. And what he doesn't know is his for the taking because I'm translucent. Fun. I realize how bad an idea this was 20 seconds into the ride. Whatever they gave Greg is messing with his working memory. He's able to focus only on what's right in front of his eyes. And, catastrophically, 70% of his field of view happens to be me. The other 30 is, of course, Jack.
You guys, this is fun.
Is it not fun? Just the three of us.
No mom, no dad, no Uncle Paul.
Very fun,
Jack says, navigating out of the lot. Greg's head lolls back against the seat.
Jackie, you can ask Elsie all those things you wanted to know.
Hey, Elsie,
he attempts to whisper in my ear, though it comes out slurred and very loud.
Jackie has a thing for you. Like, he stares all the time. And he asks so many questions about you.
Oh, Greg, this is mortifying. That's really not what's happening. In the front seat, Jack's silence is quietly, painfully loud.
Full disclosure, Jackie, Greg continues with a loopy grin. I made up all the answers. I don't know if she likes to travel, if she wants kids, if she's into movies. Like, how am I supposed to know?
Jack's expression through the rearview mirror is sealed.
She has a thing for Twilight, I've discovered.
Greg is delighted.
The vampire or the wolf?
Greg, how was the retreat? I interrupt him with a smile.
So mandatory. But then my tooth exploded in my mouth and I got to leave early. Hey, you know how sometimes there are shoes on the power lines? Who puts them there?
Not sure. Listen, do you remember if you got a chance to check your texts on your way to the dentist? Or your email? Or listen to your voicemails? He stares at me with an intense, solemn expression. I tense with anticipation as his eyes go wide. Then he says,
Oh my God. We should play I Spy.
I sigh. 15 minutes later, after Greg claims to spy a bear, P. Diddy, and a can of garbanzo beans, we park outside a pretty Roxbury house carved into two apartments. Where are your keys, Greg? I ask.
I've got a spare,
Jack says, finishing in 20 seconds a parallel parking job that would have taken me 20 minutes and my whole dignity.
Just make sure he doesn't wander into traffic.
I'd like to think that Greg's place is what mine and Cece's would be like if we managed to lift our credenza, could afford non-bedbugged furniture, and were less prone to frolicking in our own filth. It's simple and cozy, covered in knickknacks that remind me of Greg's personality and his quirky sense of humor. Jack dwarfs the entrance, but he doesn't seem out of place. He obviously spends time here because he knows exactly where to find the light switch, how to raise the thermostat, which shelf to set the mail on.
Cutlet!
Greg yells, fisting Jack's shirt.
Cutlet! Where is she?
I look around, expecting to see a cat slinking closer, but it's just us in the apartment. Me idling, Jack relentlessly inching Greg toward a bedroom.
On my desk at work. Let's go take a nap, G. Sounds nice, right?
Did you water her?
Has she changed?
Does she still remember me?
I watered it. Her. She looks the same. Not sure she remembers you since she's non-sentient, like most cactuses. How about that nap?
Can I have a drink first, please?
Elsie, could you get him some water while I put him to bed?
Milk? Did you know that milk comes from nipples?
Jack and I exchange a brief, isn't co-parenting fun, glance, and I rush into the kitchen. I can't find the actual glasses, so I pour the milk into a bon maman jar. I'll bring it to Greg, then leave in an Uber the second they disappear into the bedroom. I have my lecture to prep. Cece doesn't know where I am. I can't be alone with Jack. Yes, perfect. Here you go, I tell Greg, who's being herded to his bedroom while humming Gangnam Style. You only have almond milk, technically not from a nipple. I hand him the jar and big mistake. Huge, because Greg sips 9% of it before spilling the entirety of it on Jack's shirt. I gasp. Greg laughs uproariously while yelling something about the milk being back on nipples. Jack gives his brother a patient, ever-suffering dad smile.
You having fun?
So much.
Hey, remember when we switched mom's yogurt with mayo? I do. It was genius. Your idea, of course. And mom puked. She was pissed. Come on, let's go to bed. I got grounded for a day.
But you got grounded for 2 weeks because she kind of hates you.
Worth it.
Jack smiles, like he doesn't mind being told that his mom hates him. Greg tries to embrace him, and Jack stops him.
But I'll get non-nipple milk all over you.
Why don't I get him into bed? I take Greg's arm, pulling him with me. Go find something clean. The bedroom is just a tad messier than the rest of the place. The bed's still unmade from Greg's last night in Boston. He's narrating a documentary on the environmental toll of almond production, which makes cajoling him into lying down marginally easier. I don't turn on the lights, and he falls quiet while I'm untying his shoe. Thank God he's asleep. I'll be out of here in a minute, and
I like you, Elsie.
I look up from Greg's boot. His eyes are closed. I like you too, Greg.
Remember how you said we could be friends?
Yeah.
I want to be friends.
My heart breaks a little. Not when you snap out of it and check your email, you won't. Awesome. Let's be friends.
Good. Because I like you.
Did I mention it?
Yep. Not like you. I don't know if I can like people.
I know, I say softly. I pull the boot off and get started on the other.
But you're cool. Like a Barbie.
A Barbie?
You're not blonde, but there's one of you for every occasion.
Something catches the corner of my eye and I turn. Jack, standing in the doorframe, listening to us. His expression is dark, his brow is furrowed, and his chest is bare. He's taken off his soiled shirt, and for some reason, I am physically unable to look anywhere but at his body, which has me realizing that I was totally wrong about him. He is big and well-muscled, very well-muscled. And I can see all the, all that stuff that people always talk about. The bulk, the mass, the abs, the biceps and the triceps stretching under the ink. But he's not made the way I thought he'd be. I expected a gym rat body with 0.3% body fat and bulging veins. But he's a little different. He's real. Imperfectly, usefully strong. There's something unrefined about him, as though he stumbled upon all this mass by chance, as though he's never even thought about taking a mirror selfie in his life. Something warm and liquid twists behind my navel. And the feeling is so rare for me, so unfamiliar, for a moment I barely recognize it. Then I do, and I flush hotly. What is wrong with me? Why do I find the idea of someone not going to the gym attractive? Why can't I stop staring at him? And why is he staring back? Jack clears his throat. He turns to reach for something to wear in Greg's dresser, and whatever's happening between his shoulder blades looks like a religious experience.
Elsie, Greg mumbles from the bed.
I'm grateful for the reminder to look away.
Is soy milk from a nipple?
Oh, no. My voice is hoarse. Breathing's hard, but marginally easier once Jack walks out of the room. Soy's a bean.
You're so wise. And full of layers. Like
an onion?
Like a yogurt. With the fruit on the bottom.
I smile and drag a quilt over him. Let's play a game. I'll go in the living room, and we're both going to count however high we can. Whoever counts highest wins. I have vague memories of Mom making Lucas and Lance do this. Of course, like everything with Lucas and Lance, it always devolved into them fighting over who could count the highest and waking up the entire house.
What a shitty game.
Greg yawns.
I'll kick your ass.
I bet. I close the door between 13 and 14. Jack's waiting on the green Lawson couch, wearing a too-tight hoodie that's probably tent-like on Greg. The mysteries of genetics. He doesn't look up. He sits motionless, elbows on his knees, staring at one of Greg's colorful, artsy wall prints with a half-vacant, all-tense expression. My stomach sinks. He's pissed. Really pissed. I've seen him amused, curious, annoyed, even angry last night with Austin. But this, he's furious. Because I'm here. Because he thinks I extorted his brother. Because I overfilled the milk jar. There's going to be a whole messy confrontation. And after the last 3 days, I'm not even sure I want to avoid it. Listen, I take 2 steps toward him. 1 back, 2 forward. If we have to argue, we might as well be close. Keep the volume down to avoid waking Greg. I run my sweaty palms over the back of my leggings. I know I haven't been exactly truthful. And I assume you're figuring out what's going on between Greg and me. But this entire shit show is reaching a quantum entanglement, spontaneous, parametric down conversion, decoherent stage. And I'm asking you to wait till Greg feels better to have a frank conversation with him. Jack opens his mouth, no doubt to unleash his wrath. And then he doesn't. Instead, he closes it, shakes his head, and covers his eyes with his hands. Oh, fuck. What is this? Jack? No answer. Jack, I debate what to do for a moment, then go sit next to him. If he starts yelling now, well, R.I.P. my eardrum. It's okay, I say. Greg's not sick or anything, I promise. Nothing bad is...
He told me.
Jack straightens his back, eyes once again on the print.
I should have known.
Known what?
When he was, I'm not sure, 15? He was still in high school. I came back from college during break.
His throat works.
He took me aside and said that he was worried, that he couldn't imagine ever wanting to be in a romantic relationship. And I told him he shouldn't worry, that it was still early and he'd find someone, that it was normal to be nervous before becoming sexually active, that he should just keep an open mind. And then I...
Something jumps in Jack's jaw. He closes his eyes.
And then I asked to watch Battlestar Galactica together, like a total fucking asshole.
I never came out to anyone in my family, Greg once told me. I think I tried once, kind of. But then I chickened out and... I don't know. It's better this way. Have you ever heard of the ACE aerospectrum? I ask gently. I'm being gentle to Jack, apparently. He shakes his head, eyes still closed. It's, well, some of it is what Greg told you. But there's more. Lots of complexities. There are good resources online that you might want to look up before you guys have another talk. And I think he's still trying to figure himself out. Many of us are, I nearly add. But it's more of myself than I'd rather show.
Fuck.
Jack turns to me. His expression is... Devastated is the only word that comes to mind. If he started slapping himself, I wouldn't be surprised.
He should have punched me in the face.
I open my mouth, close it. Then think, what the hell? Would it make you feel better if I punched you in the face? His eyebrow lifts.
Would it make you feel better?
Oh, a lot. He lets out a silent, wistful laugh, and my heart squeezes for both Smith brothers. Jack, you were a kid, an ignorant, and an asshole. And okay, you're still two of these things. I lift my hand. It hovers for a few seconds by his shoulders while I contemplate the insanity of me voluntarily offering physical and emotional comfort to Dr. Jonathan Smith Turner. Endothermic hell must be super cooling. Your apology isn't mine to accept. But I know Greg cares about you as much as you care about him. His shoulder is tight and warm under my palm. Solid.
He was paying you to pretend he was in a relationship. So my family would get off his back?
I press my lips together and nod. He swears softly. If it makes any difference, he wasn't paying me to... Not that there would be anything bad with it, but we didn't. I flush under his eyes.
Fuck?
I flush harder and nod. I'm usually pretty matter-of-fact when it comes to sex. Not sure why Jack brings out the blushing adolescent in me. It's a performance of sorts. I do it for lots of men, like Austin, who, by the way, was by far my worst client, by parsecs. Greg's the best, of course. I glance away. I'm babbling, but it's weird to talk about foe with someone who's not directly involved in some capacity. And Greg and I, we became friends. I know it's unbelievable, given that he paid me and that I made up an entire backstory for myself, but I would have done it for free. For him. If I could afford it. Except that
Adjuncting doesn't pay for shit.
I laugh. Pretty much.
Jack sighs and leans against the back of the couch.
Why didn't you tell me? When we met at the restaurant.
It wasn't my thing to tell, you know? You were going to ask why he'd hired me, and I was going to have to waffle and... We should probably stop talking about this. So you can have the conversation with him. Once he's not so, focused on quinoa and nipples. He nods. And then he does something unexpected. Revolutionary. Gobsmacking. Universe rocking. He says,
I'm sorry, Elsie.
It takes me by surprise. So much so that I blurt out a, for what?
For accusing you of lying to my brother. Over and over.
You did, didn't you? I cock my head and observe him for a moment. His strong, handsome face looks pained. Does it hurt?
What?
This apology. He glares at me and I laugh. Was it your first? Did I pop your apology cherry?
Apology retracted.
His expression shifts into something inward, like he's finally processing an important, crucial, weighty piece of information. Like something's shifting in his worldview, and the universe around him needs to be adjusted for it. I wonder what that might be till he focuses back on me and says,
You and Greg never dated. He doesn't.
There is something hesitant to it, like he needs to hear me confirm it, to make sure it's true, sculpted into stone. Nope. He's not into me. Never has been. I nearly roll my eyes. Ya happy?
Yes.
His tone is dead serious, and I snort, standing up. Time to leave. Shall we Grubhub champagne and cupcakes? Celebrate that I won't be polluting the shades of the Smith estate? He gives me an odd, long look.
You think that's the reason I'm happy?
What else? He shakes his head but doesn't elaborate. Instead, he stands too, following me to the coat rack by the entrance.
Did Greg ever tell you I was a physicist?
Nope. Well, yes, but it didn't register because projectile vomiting was involved. Don't ask. He also didn't know I was a physicist because we're usually stingy with personal details. Fake last names, fake professions, an extra layer of protection, you know?
We?
There are several of us. Fake daters, that is. We work for this app, Foe. Available for Apple and Android. Android versions, so buggy, though. I need to stop babbling. Jack's looking at me like I'm a Higgs boson about to give him a lap dance.
Is that how Austin found you?
Sadly, yeah. I bite my lower lip. Do you think he told Monica about my alternative academic career yet?
He won't.
How can you be sure?
After you left, I followed up with him.
Jack's features are a bland mask, unreadable as ever.
You'll be fine.
How do you know?
Trust me.
I have no idea what that means. I want to ask, but his tone sounds final, and anyway, shouldn't you want Austin to tell Monica? So George will get the job, and you guys can bro out in the MIT restroom?
Do aromatherapy together and discuss who has the biggest hadron collider? George will get the job anyway. And we won't be doing that.
A wild dimple appears. Everyone knows yours is larger anyway. His eyebrow cocks and I turn to the coat rack. Shit. Did I say that out loud? I can't believe your mom refused to pick Greg up for a Manny. What a jerk.
She's not.
She totally is a jerk. Come on, who?
I meant she's not my mother, and she wouldn't appreciate you saying otherwise.
Okay, Edgelord. That's a bit dramatic. We all have issues with our parents, but
Caroline is not my mother. Not biologically, nor in any other way.
I turn back to him.
What? My mother is dead. Greg is my half-brother.
I stare at him for a long stretch. Then I close my eyes. Puck.
Fuck?
Fuck, I scratch my head. I just hate it when I act like an asshole without even wanting to. He laughs.
Don't worry. Like you said, she's a jerk. Dad's no better.
Still, I'm sorry about your mom. I didn't know.
I'm not surprised.
He shrugs in his impossibly tight Suffolk hoodie.
No one talks about her.
That explains it, though.
Explains what?
Why Greg's such a sweetheart and you, dimple on.
And me?
I look away, flushing. Nothing. Anyway, I rummage in my coat pockets for my phone. Greg's settled down, so I'm going to call an Uber.
So,
Jack asks conversationally.
What came first?
I look up.
The fake girlfriend enterprise.
He sounds genuinely curious.
Or the myriad of different Elsies you impersonate. Was it on-the-job training, or had you been modifying yourself before?
I don't... Oh, there's no point in arguing with him. Not when he's not even wrong. Listen, now that we've ascertained that I'm not some gold digger threatening the Smith gene pool, could you stop?
Stop?
This weird, I gesticulate between us, anthropological character study of me. Fine, you got me. I want people to like me, and I give them the me they want. I enjoy getting along with others. Gasp! Report me to the authenticity police for aiding and abetting.
It's easier like that, isn't it?
What is?
Never showing anyone who you really are.
He watches me calmly, patiently. In the soft light of the apartment, his eyes are dark all around. Sometimes I hear a car running, but the traffic here is not nearly as loud as at my own apartment.
That way, if something goes wrong, if someone rejects you, then it's not about you, is it? When you're yourself, that's when you're exposed, vulnerable. But if you hold back, losing a game's always painful, but knowing that you haven't played your best hand makes it bearable.
I hide my fist behind my back, clenching it tight at the unsolicited psychoanalysis. My nails bite into my palm. Bold of you to assume that the real me is my best hand. That stupid, crooked half-smile is back.
Foolish of you to think it isn't.
Come now. I force myself to smile sweetly. We both know you're only mad because I've never been the Elsie you wanted.
Is that so?
He looks like he was put on this stringed plane of reality as an omniscient entity. I'm angry, and he needs to stop talking like he understands. It's your own damn fault, Jack.
Why?
Because you, I point my finger in his face, don't give me anything. Everyone else does. Something to latch on to. Something I can use to be the person they want. But you're not putting out signals. And that's why you're not getting the VIP treatment like everyone else. So quit whining, please.
I see.
His hand, warm and calloused, closes around my wrist and pulls my index finger from his face down to his chest. He covers the back of my hand with his palm, and what the hell is he...
Have you considered that maybe you're already the way I want you to be? That maybe there are no signals because nothing needs to be changed?
I scoff. Here he is, the Jack I've come to know and loathe. Right, sure.
Once again,
he says, tone oddly gentle.
What happened to you, Elsie?
Seriously? What happened to... My hand is still under his. I lift my chin, bringing our faces that much closer. This is what happened to me, Jack. A little over 6 months ago, I go meet my date's family for the first time. And maybe we aren't really together, but you know what? It doesn't matter. What matters is that since the very start, my date's brother is an absolute prick. He keeps staring at me like I'm Ginger Spice crashing the royal wedding. He asks his brother questions about me because he thinks I'm inferior and unworthy. He acts unfriendly and suspicious whenever I'm around. I think we can both agree that, given the opportunity, he'd want to change the shit out of me. The last part comes out more aggressively than I meant, but whatever. I'm mad now, growing exponentially madder as I watch Jack nod slowly, as though considering my words.
Well, that's an interpretation.
Heat radiates through me from his grip. It warms my belly, licks up my spine, reminds me how close we've somehow gravitated. It's facts, I hiss.
You're a physicist, Elsie. You should know better than to throw around the word fact when quantum mechanics exists.
What's your interpretation then? He says nothing for a long moment, as if collecting his thoughts or deciding whether I'm worth his words. Then something shifts. The air in the room becomes thicker. His Adam's apple bobs, his eyes fix on mine, and he starts talking.
A little over 6 months ago, I go to a family birthday expecting the usual night of misery. I'm only there for my brother because I can count on two fingers the relatives I care about, and he's one of them. We usually stick together. But this dinner is different. My brother brings a date, a woman he's never spoken about. Weird, since we talk nearly every day. The family, especially his mom, are thrilled.
Jack's grip on my hand shifts, softens. My fingers are still on his chest, half pressed against his heart. My own has begun to thump in a hesitant, bracing way.
She's beautiful, the girl. Really beautiful. There are lots of beautiful women in the world, and if you can believe it, it's not something I usually notice. But I'm paying more attention to her than I otherwise would. Someone pulls Greg away before he has a chance to introduce me yet, but I watch her touch my grandmother's go board and pick up one of the stones the traditional way, index and middle finger. I watch her sneak a bite of cheese. At some point, I'm almost sure she says something that no one but me understands as a Heisenberg principle joke. And then, when my brother comes back, that's when it starts for me. Because I watch her run interference between him and my family in a way I've never managed. And believe me, I've tried. I've spent 30 years of my life trying to protect him from their bullshit. And this girl, she just does it better. I've never seen him so happy is not the right word, but he seems at ease. And as the night goes on, I can't stop looking at her. And I realize something. She's hypervigilant, constantly thinking two steps ahead, anticipating others' needs like people are equations that need to be solved in real time. It's subtle, but it's there. And he shrugs, free hand coming up to scratch the back of his neck, like he's still puzzled. My chest is getting heavy, the air in my lungs suddenly leaden. That night I get home, go to bed, cannot sleep till I admit to myself that I'm jealous or envious, a mix. My brother's settling down, keeping secrets, and we're close, so I'm not used to it. And the girl, maybe it's how good she is with the person I care about the most. Maybe I have a type and she just happens to embody it. But, well, I'm reacting to her more than I can remember ever doing. With anyone. I'm having some complicated feelings, but I force myself to get over them. Push them out of my head. I am, briefly, successful. Then there's Labor Day. She passes out in my arms. No explanation. She acts like nothing happened and goes back to that personality twisting of hers. She does beg me not to tell Greg, though, and it has me wondering if this is not a solid relationship. His voice is getting lower, deeper, and his eyes move into the middle distance like he's taking a step backward inside himself. Our hands must have shifted because my palm is flat under his. I wonder whether he's aware. I wonder why I don't pull free. And that's when I realize how much of a piece of shit I am. Because she's obviously good for my brother. But I am relieved that their relationship might not go anywhere. And I'd love to lie to myself and come up with a valid excuse. But the truth is, it's because I'm a shithead. It's because I want her for myself. I want to, I don't even fucking know. I want to take her to dinner, make sure she's relaxed, make sure she doesn't feel like she needs to think two steps ahead. I want to know why she can hold a go stone. And I really, really want to, well, I'll spare you the graphic details. I'm sure you can imagine.
His smile is small and rueful. My stomach is tight, tied in a million knots, and I'm hot, hot all over.
Avoiding her is the best course of action. I don't mind skipping family functions, and my brother never talks about her. It's like he forgets that she exists, which is weird because I can't stop thinking about her. I ask questions, even though I shouldn't. I have a couple of really wrong, really messy dreams about my brother's girlfriend. When I see her again after a while, at my grandmother's birthday, it's not any better. It's worse. But I'm never going to act on it. It'll go away. I know it. When I find out that she's not who she said she is, I'm mad. Really mad, because Greg's the best person I know and does not deserve this shit. But I'm also a little relieved.
He looks at me again.
You know why, Elsie?
There's something disarmingly, devastatingly self-confident about Jack. About the way he laid out all these facts without hesitating. As though owning his feelings is first and second nature. I study the glint of the lamp hitting his golden hair and wonder why this man would even bother thinking of me. He's figured out my entire game. I came to him empty-handed. My muscles feel numb. I shake my head with difficulty.
I'm relieved. Because whatever thing I have for her, it'll go away. It won't survive knowing that she lied. Except that I didn't account for having to watch her talk about physics or read her work. I didn't account for having to spend 2 days with her and finding out that she is.
He smiles at me. Gentle. Resigned.
Spectacular.
There is a loud noise, but neither of us look that way. We're locked too tight into each other, bound to whatever this thick, starved, voracious moment between us is. Until we hear,
"Guys, why does pee smell bad after you eat asparagus?"
I glance at Greg, who is naked, I yelp, twisting my neck to turn away.
"Dude,"
Jack's voice is hoarse. He's shaking his head.
"Where the hell are your clothes?"
"Lost them." "Hey, remember when we tried to see who could piss the farthest away?"
Jack winces and takes a step away from me. His hand holds onto mine for just a second longer. And then, all of a sudden, the room is cold and drafty.
"I should probably," I start.
He gives me a weighty look.
"Go home."
"Yep." I find my phone while Jack whispers,
"Let's take this to the bathroom, buddy."
And I slip out as I hear something about asparapee,
No, thank you.
The second the front door closes behind me, I slump against it. I take a deep breath and stare for a long, long time at the glow of Christmas lights the neighbors forgot to take down. 12. Collision, inelastic. From dupont.camilla@bu.edu. Subject, Macbeth Reflection Paper. Dr. Hannaday, I'm focusing my paper on Lady Macbeth as the fourth witch. Some parts of the text support this interpretation. Do you mind taking a look at what I have so far? The file is attached. Sincerely, Cam. From martinash3@umass.edu. Subject, who is cute?
You, Doc. You cute. You really cute. You so cute.
From martinash3@umass.edu. Subject,
please disregard. Dr. Hannaway, my roommate accidentally ate the wrong batch of brownies and locked himself in the bathroom with my phone. Please ignore any emails I might have sent. Cheers, Ashton.
From GreenbergMichael12@emerson.edu. Subject, thermopaper.
Extension, please.
The following week is soul-crushingly busy, with both the run-of-the-mill grind of adjuncthood and catching up on the work I missed during the interview. No worries, though. In between proctoring exams and teaching the wonders of the Fraunhofer diffraction, I still carve out opportunities to agonize over whether I got the job. When I'll know whether I got the job, how I'll know whether I got the job, and who'll tell me whether I got the job. See? Excellent multitasking skills. Almost as though I'm not a human disaster juggling 7 subclinical mood disorders at any given time. The iTwat becomes my faithful companion, lest I miss a call, an email, a text message, a Vatican smoke signal informing me that my days of pain are gone.
Welcome to MIT, Elsie, says Monica's disembodied voice, ready to groom me as her successor.
You're now particle of the physics department.
Volkov guffaws, hands on his belly.
I hear you stole George's job,
Jack tells me, clucking his tongue from a whole foot above me, smiling only with those beautiful, genetically improbable eyes of his.
You and I should really learn to get along.
It's all in vain. Whenever I pick up, it's telemarketers. Phishing scams reminding me to pay a warranty on the car I do not own. Lucas calling to bitch about Lance. Lance calling to bitch about Lucas. Mom calling to bitch about Lucas and Lance. On one memorable occasion, Dana calling to ask my opinion on whether my brothers would agree to have sex with her at the same time. Why is everyone so into threesomes all of a sudden? I ask, and then hastily walk away when the secretary of the UMass biophysics department looks up from the exam she's archiving. I try to call Greg, but he doesn't pick up or answer my texts, which sends me into an additional spiral of anxiety. I've ruined his life. He'll hate me forever. But I can't force him to accept my apology. So I sublimate the nervous energy into refreshing my email. A beloved, if fruitless, hobby. No MIT.edu address appears in my inbox. Just students on the verge of mental breakdowns at 11:34 on a Wednesday night because they forgot whether Chapter 8 will be covered on the test. Please, please, please say no, Dr. Each. Because it's grad school application season, a few even make it to office hours to ask for recommendation letters. When I point out to a Boston University senior that he failed my class, he blinks confusedly and asks,
"Is that a no?"
On Thursday night, halfway through loading the dishwasher, Cece catches me trying to unlock the home screen with my elbow.
"That's it." She picks up the iTwat and slides it in her pocket. "I'm confiscating this till tomorrow."
"No, no, please. I really need it." I sound defensive and whiny. What a combination. It's my Linus blankie.
You've developed a transitional object in your late 20s?
A what?
Security blankets, teddy bears, you know. That stuff kids latch onto when they're anxious. They're called transitional objects.
Where do they transition you to?
She gives me a consternated look. The merciless ravages of adulthood. It actually helps, not being able to stalk the social media of the entire MIT search committee for one evening. Monica posts only about the papers her grads publish anyway. Volkoff hasn't been active since 2017 when he retweeted a "Thank God Newton wasn't under a coconut tree" meme. George, if that's his real account, is all about pics of his lunches, which look annoyingly delicious. Jack, of course, is not on social media, which is fine, because he's in my head plenty. Not that I know why. First, I'm not sure I believe anything he said. Second, I'm almost sure I don't believe anything he said. Third, he's still the guy who wrote that hoax paper. And fourth, he wants another candidate to get the job. Fifth, no. Just no. Sixth, if I believed anything he said, 3, 4, and 5 would still be valid. No, I didn't see him during the rest of my interview, I tell Dr. L when I visit him in his office. He smiles, pleased. His turtleneck is the same dark gray as his hair.
Very well, Elise. And what about your talk? Did you change it like I told you?
Dr. L's feedback can sometimes be a tad out of touch. For instance, I don't think that writing the entire history of liquid crystals research on a slide in 8.5-point font is a good idea. But I did. I lie. When he smiles again, I savor knowing that I pleased him. But the moment I step out of his office, guilt sweeps over me for deceiving him. Or maybe for having admitted to myself that I find Jack, who ruined my mentor's career, attractive, viscerally attractive, in a way I didn't think I was able to notice. It occurs to me on Friday night that the attraction has little to do with him being tall or handsome and everything to do with how perceptive he is. Jack sees me, a puppet who maybe, just maybe, is a real girl after all. And because he sees me, I cannot interact with him safely. And that's why I'm not willing to think about the things he said to me. The way he looked. The dimple. His hand sliding up the inside of my thigh. Warm. Inexorable.
Elsie, you know what I want to do to you.
I shake my head.
I'll spare you the graphic details. I'm sure you can imagine.
Okay, yes, there have been dreams. A dream. Graphic, detailed, a little sweaty. But no, nope, no. I have other things to get an ulcer over. Time's arrow, climate change, the lack of government accountability and transparency. My professional future. I can choose what to stress about, and Jack's not it. That's what I tell myself until Saturday night, when it all comes to a head. Sometimes I wonder why I wasn't born in the early 17th century, which really hinders my ability to wear a ruff in public and practice leech-based medicine. Or in ancient Rome, where I could have spent my days in a socially acceptable cycle of reclining, eating, puking. But then I experience wonders like this in IMAX, and I know, I just know that I was meant to be alive in this day and age. My reward for an upright, leechless existence. I blink at Cece, eyes still bleary from 3 hours in the theater. When we walked inside, the sun was up and the last week's worth of snow had finally melted. Now it's pitch black, and Cece's catching a whole new batch of flakes with her tongue, like the Florida-born dork she is. I do love her, quite a bit.
And that's why I sacrificed my precious Saturday afternoon to the gods of faking it and spent it watching the original version of the famed 1968 Kubrick masterpiece, 2001: A Space Odyssey. 160 excruciating minutes of solar system screensaver pics set to Vivaldi, maybe? With movies like this, who needs waterboarding?
Wasn't it amazing?
She beams.
It sure was lots of things.
Cece is not too high on the cinematography to notice my tone.
You didn't like it?
She frowns.
I do agree that the Dawn of Man scene where the ape looks at the bone was dearly missed.
Yeah, that's it. She steps in front of me, cocking her head. Bundled up in her red maxi coat, she looks about 16.
You didn't enjoy the movie?
It's easier like that, isn't it? Never showing anyone who you really are. When you're yourself, that's when you're exposed.
For a split second, what Jack told me flashes through my head. A too catchy tune earworming around. It's nothing I hadn't known, but once put into words, it got harder to ignore. A brusque shift from procedural to semantic knowledge. Say I considered it. Cece, after all, is my closest friend. I could smile, slide my arm under hers, pull her toward the tea station, and say conversationally, I didn't like the movie. I have no idea what even happened. My favorite character was the evil computer, and 20 minutes in, I was on the verge of letting out the piercing shriek of a million brood 10 cicadas. Also, I'd love to never again watch the director's cut of literally anything. In fact, I'd rather spend an afternoon staring at my student loan portal, the one that makes me burst into tears once a month. And since we're at it, the other day, I caught your hedgehog defecating on my pillow. My tea is next. The thought of admitting any of this makes my right side ache. That ulcer, probably. I still slide my arm under Cece's, but what I say is, it was sublime. The journey of man's consciousness into the universe. The eventual passage of that consciousness onto a new level. It's a line from Roger Ebert's 1997 review of the movie. I memorized it this morning.
Unparalleled, she beams, then squints. It's the job. That's why you're blurg.
I'm not blurg. Am I blurg?
Yes. Are you worried about the job?
No.
No?
Well, I concede. Yes. She stops me in the middle of the sidewalk.
You'll get it. You did great.
Cece's in a good mood from watching slow-mo space ballet, and I don't want to spoil it. I smile. Very optimistic.
Maybe we should watch another movie when we get home,
she tugs at my sleeve.
Something light and funny. Modern Times or The Great Dictator? Laughter is the best medicine.
I think antibiotics are the best medicine. Unless it's a viral infection, in which case, I stop because someone behind me is saying my name. The worst thing is, I know exactly whose voice it is because it's burned into my auditory cortex in a way that signifies certain neural damage. But I turn around anyway, and there he is, Jack, in his black North Face coat, which is familiar by now. With his broad shoulders and light hair and inexplicable gut-felt presence. Taking up more room than he should on the sidewalk, looking at me as though I'm the ghost of Nikola Tesla, and meeting me by chance in downtown Boston is unforeseen but very welcome.
Oh,
I croak.
Shit. 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 Why is he here?
It's... Hi.
God, his voice. That lopsided smile.
That's what you say when you meet someone, Elsie.
Right, I swallow. Hi. My first thought is that I've conjured him. By thinking about him 40 times a day, up to and including seconds ago. The second, I must be cursed. All I want is to excise Jack from my life. But I'm just like the Australopithecus afarensis in 2001, trying to frolic in the prehistoric veldt, forever doomed to be hunted by an alien monolith. I think I dozed off. The third, he's not alone. There's a tall woman by his side with long braided hair and deep red lips. They were clearly in the middle of laughing about something. When Jack stopped to talk to me, she bumped against him and never moved away. He's on a date with someone else. Jack's out on a date with someone, and it feels like a stone in my belly.
One of your grads? The woman asks, entertained.
Her dark skin is immaculate, and she looks familiar in the way very beautiful people often do.
No.
Jack has yet to look away from me.
Not quite.
Hi, Cece interrupts with her most charming grin. Clearly, Elsie is experiencing a breakdown in the social pragmatic skills necessary to introduce us, so... What's your name, tall gentleman?
Jack.
Nice to meet you, Jack.
She thrusts out her hand, which disappears inside his. I stare, half paralyzed.
I'm Celeste, Elsie's most favorite person in the whole world.
Are you?
His eyes slide to mine.
Must be nice.
He's still half smiling, like this is making his Saturday night.
Well, you know, it's hard work, lots of cheese sharing, and I did just take her to watch 2001, which she loved.
Oh my God, the most beautiful woman in the world is delighted.
We were in there too.
Stunning, right?
A masterpiece. Despite Jack's commentary on the predictability of the Evil Space series arc. He lifts one eyebrow.
I got bored.
You always get bored at the movies. She presses her shoulder against his. I have to confiscate his phone and poke him awake.
Because you always take me to see boring movies.
She pinches his arm through the coat. If it were up to you, we'd only watch Jackass.
It was once.
Once too many. He shrugs, unbothered. I cannot stop looking at the two of them framed by the snowflakes. The easy banter, Jack's obvious affection, the woman's fingers still around his sleeve. Something slimy and cold presses behind my sternum.
So, Cece butts in. How do you guys know Elsie?
I don't, actually. The woman says with a curious look at Jack. How do you know Elsie, Jack? His eyes are fixed on me again.
She dated my brother, among other things.
The atmosphere changes instantly. The air was already icy, dense with the promise of snowstorms, but the temperature drops colder as people parse the meaning of Jack's words. First, there's Cece, who knows that I don't date. Not for real, and is putting together where she last heard the name Jack. She scowls and takes a protective step closer, ready to defend me against my most recent arch enemy, kitten hissing at a bison style. And then there's the woman. Her expression morphs too, into something knowing and intrigued.
You're Greg's girlfriend.
That Elsie. She looks between me and Jack once, twice, and then holds her hand out to me.
I've heard so much about you.
It's really nice to meet you. I'm George. My brain halts. Well, Georgina. Sepulveda. But please, call me George. Her smile is warm and welcoming, as though I'm a dear friend of Jack's whom she's been dying to meet. Georgina Sepulveda. I mouth. Barely audible. The name unlocks a drawer in my brain full of scientific papers, TED Talks, conference addresses. Georgina Sepulveda, young physics hotshot. I'm a fan of her work. She doesn't look familiar. She is.
Yep, that's me.
Her hand is still outstretched,
I should take it. I work with Jack.
George?
Jack warns.
Okay. Technically, not yet.
But I'll start at MIT next year.
What? Come on, Jack. I got the formal offer. Sent back the signed contract this morning. I can tell people.
She gives me a conspiratorial look. My stomach churns.
You're a librarian, right? I love libraries.
Next to me, Cece sucks in a breath. Meanwhile, I nod. It must be an automatic reaction because all my neural cells are busy sluggishly processing what I just heard. Georgina. George. MIT. Formal offer. No.
No, no, no.
There is lead in my belly. Blood thumps in my ears, and I take a step back. And for a split second, my mind skitters to a place far away. My apartment. The computer I left on the bed. The half-written manuscript on it. The one I was finally going to finish when I got the MIT job. But I didn't get it. George did. George, who's with Jack. And it's over. I gave it my all, and it wasn't enough.
Elsie, Jack starts.
He must have moved because George and Cece have disappeared behind him. His throat bobs.
Unsuccessful candidates are not notified until all paperwork is complete.
I shake my head and he falls silent. His eyes are full of compassion, of sincere, heartbreaking sorrow. I cannot bear to watch it. I turn around slowly, step away just as slowly, barely taking in the sidewalk. The man walking is husky, the group of students feigning excitement for an upcoming Truffaut retrospective. I walk past them and I walk some more, unhurried, like everything's going to be fine. Everything will be all right. I'm at the red crosswalk light when I hear,
Elsie!
It's Cece, calling from where I left her behind. I ignore her. Is everything okay? George. Shit. Did I do something? Cece doesn't answer her.
Elsie, let's just go home.
Silence. Then Jack.
Elsie, come back, please.
He sounds like his eyes looked, and it's simply intolerable. The crossing light turns green. I take a deep breath, let the cold air fill my lungs, and start running. 13. Annihilation. I run one block, one and a half, two. Snowflakes stick to my skin. My lungs burn. My pod catches on the waistband of my leggings, and yet it feels good. I'm no athlete. I've only ever run for the bus and passing PE grades, but this is nicely all-consuming. I focus on the slap of my boots against the sidewalk. The oxygen that's never quite enough. The taste of iron in the back of my throat. My thigh muscles clench, protest, but the feeling of getting away makes up for it. The snow thickens, forming a tunnel, a cocoon to tune everything else out. I'm making my way through a wormhole to a separate point in space-time. A different timeline in which I'm not a failure. I won't spend one more year without healthcare and the money to live like a fucking human being. I won't disappoint my mentor and my friend and... Fingers close around my wrist. I lose my balance, stumble, fall on my face. No, not quite. Something stops me. Strong hands on my waist straighten me, set me on my heels. And then Jack is towering in front of me, the colossus of everything that's wrong in my life. I want to scratch my nails down his face and see him in as much pain as I am in right now. I could. We're virtually alone, hundreds of feet away from Cece and George. Shit. I just ran away from them like I'm fucking bananas. Like I'm an entire fruit salad.
You weren't supposed to find out like that,
he says, barely winded. I cannot breathe. Fuck this shit. I'm never exercising again.
She has no idea you were the other candidate. You were supposed to be notified on Monday.
Fuck you!
I spit out. Jack is taken aback, and so am I. Did not expect for that to come out of my mouth, but in desperatio veritas. We share a second of surprise, then he collects himself. It was never going to be you, Elsie. His tone is not unkind, but it's not compassionate either. Like he knows I could take neither. Volkov and his team were never going to vote for you, because I walk around him, but he grabs my wrist. Because it was never a fair competition. I told you that George would get the job.
It was just posturing.
It was not. I told you as much as I could without divulging confidential information. This entire search was mishandled, and making you aware of who the other candidate was a huge misstep on Monica's part.
Well, clearly I had no clue who George really was.
He exhales. Elsie. A flake settles on his cheekbone, right under the slice of blue. It instantly melts. Elsie, you never stood a chance.
I hate you.
That's fine. Hate me. But know this. It was a bad faith interview. He takes a step closer. His warmth makes the chill bearable, and I hate him for it. Elsie, I am sorry.
Bullshit.
Elsie, do you even realize what this means for me? For you, it's
the Hunger Games, the Academe Edition. But this is my lousy future and everything I've worked toward for my entire adult life. I needed that job.
I know.
No, you don't know.
I press my hands against his chest and push him away. He doesn't budge, which makes me explosively mad.
You don't know what it feels like to have a chronic condition and no health insurance. To have to be perfect. To have to be on all the time because everyone around you expects you to be. And it's pretty fucking hard to be perfect when you're working 15-hour days for no money at a job you hate. You're not experiencing any of that, so you don't fucking know how I...
You're terrified. You're overwhelmed. The job market is at its worst, and you don't know if there will be openings next year. Believe me, I can relate.
Oh, really? You can relate? With your long and arduous trek into STEM academia as a white, wealthy man?
He leans forward. His hand closes around my upper arm. Do you think I'm happy about this?
You got exactly what you wanted.
I did. His face hardens. And a bunch of things I did not want to.
Oh yeah? Like what? Humiliating another theoretical physicist? Installing your girlfriend down the hall so you can get laid between classes? Enough.
I recoil. His voice is harsh, and it gives just enough pause to process the words that just tumbled out of me.
Oh God. Oh my God.
I know Georgina Sepulveda. I know her work.